Accession number 18441, Reel 2.
Mr. Smith, Reel 2. And after you did this listening patrol, how many would go out on a listening patrol, by the way?
I think 4.
Under a corporal?
Yes, yes.
Who was your corporal, do you remember?
No, I can't remember the one at that time.
What was the next thing that you remember after this?
Well, we came back in the morning, fairly early, at the crack of dawn, and other people were taking our place, you see, because it was used to drawing the enemy in the daytime, and then a listening patrol was put out at night to give the others cover, to let them know if the enemy had moved into that area at that time.
Yeah. Were the Chinese very far away at this point?
Well, I couldn't say at that time. No, I didn't know too much about it then. I hadn't been forward too much.
Did you know the name of this place that you'd arrived at?
Well, it was near Chok Song.
What happened then?
Well, then from there on, I suppose we did our forward patrols out across the Indian River and back and forth from time to time. We saw nothing much for quite a while.
This was the first time you'd been in a front line, was it?
Yes.
How did you feel about it?
Well, as I say, we were trained for that sort of job, so it didn't make too much odds at the time. Didn't make too much difference at that time.
When you went out on these forward patrols, what kind of equipment and weapons did you take with you?
Well, light battle order. And I was on a Bren group, so carried the ammunition and spare barrel and so on, was number 2.
So your job was as a Bren gunner?
Bren gun, yes.
You didn't have a rifle?
No.
Any other memories that you've got from this time?
From what?
From this time of patrolling on the Imjin River.
Not a lot, no. We did our patrols up until in April, I believe it was about the 19th, I'm not sure now. When we went forward that day and we saw nothing. Came back and that same night we were attacked by the 63rd Chinese Army.
What was your first inkling that they were on the attack?
Well, the Northumberland Fusiliers were over on our right, and they were being there was gunfire from the Northumberland Fusiliers, and then before the night was very much older, then they were on our front. So that was, then all hell was being let loose then. Yeah.
Were you in a slit trench when they
attacked? Oh, yes, yes. Yes. Yes.
On the slope of a hill?
Yeah, we were on a lower hill at that time. And A Company over to our left was getting it up badly. Machine gun fire and so on. And I believe the Chinese took over a part of A Company Hill. And then, of course, next morning they're coming towards D Company then, real heavy going. And then we were ordered to, I didn't know this at the time, but we were ordered to stay there until A Company had withdrawn onto a higher position. Yeah.
How did the Chinese attack? What method did they use?
Oh, they were using bugles and calls in that respect. Machine gun fire. I remember them coming up there, and where we would have two or three on a brain group, they were about 20 deep.
So you were using your brain gun against them?
Well, yes. There's some chaps on the another platoon, the 10 or 11 platoon, were pinned down. And a friend of mine, a corporal, said, oh, we'll go round and see if we can get them out, because they had tried, two or three groups had tried, but gave it up with heavy machine gun fire and so on. We were fortunate enough to get round there. And got in the trench, and then that's where my friend lost his life.
How did it happen?
Well, it was very quick. He was a very brave man. He stood up with a brain gun underneath his arm, firing away, and they were coming in heavy. And this machine gun opened up, and of course that caught him.
Was he killed instantly?
Yes, yes.
So had you left your positions in the slip trench and gone to...
That's right, yes. We went from 12 platoon to 10 or 11 platoon. I can't remember exactly which one it was.
Was it far away?
Not very far, no, but it seemed quite a long time when we were getting fired at. I remember in the next trench over, I saw some medics go in, a medical person go in there, and there was some chap chopped up there. And then, of course, as I say, a friend lost his life there. There were two other people in there, and they were rather disturbed. And then the machine gun fire came through the top of the trench. They'd had some sort of cover over the top of the trench, and you could see the sunlight then shining through, glazing down. And one chap, he got hit right through the cheek. And I remember putting a first field dressing on that the best way I could. It was... was an awkward place to put a dressing. And then every time we moved, of course, this machine gun was firing just anyhow down. And there was another corporal then who came round. I believe he was an ex-SAS man, and tried to give us some help. I told him what had happened, and we couldn't move. And he said, well, try and put the brain gun over to me. So it's a very heavy weapon, really. So I tried to throw it out to him, to get towards him as best I could. And then, of course, the machine gun opened up and knocked the butt and that to pieces on the brain gun. So then we waited there then with this machine gun fire, because we couldn't move too much. And then one of the chaps said, oh, I think we're beat, we can't move from here. I said, oh, we will eventually. And then the machine gun had to stop firing because the Chinese were throwing stick grenades. And then that was my time to say, come on, we're out. And that's when I got out. And before that, I did shout to one of a lieutenant that was some ways back, could we get some support down here, because the enemy are real heavy on the ground down in the valley. Get some air support or artillery. And he said, oh, no, we couldn't get any air support. They're too busy elsewhere. And the artillery the same. They were busy on some other target. So I said, well, "Have you got any smoke? And let me get the hell out of here." But, of course, that never materialised. That was just one of those things.
Is this daytime or nighttime?
It started at nighttime, but it was the first thing in the morning when we went to over to the other platoon. And then, of course, by then it was real light and the sun was shining. And it was bright daylight then.
So you had a clear view of the Chinese?
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, yes, I could see them coming up there, and they got in so close that they were throwing stick grenades, as I say, and those were going off. And this corporal, originally from the SAS, reservist he was, he was knocked cold by the concussion of the grenades. And as I went out, I got out and I thought, well, we're either going to get took prisoner or killed here, so we took the way out, back to 12th platoon. Then I gave him a kick and shouted to him, and he must have been semi-conscious, and that brought him to, and he managed to get back through, but he was took prisoner afterwards. Yeah. And one of the chaps who came out just behind me, his jumper, it sounds funny at the time, but his jumper was hanging down, and a burp gun or a machine gun opened up, and it all came through his jumper.
His sleeve.
Ripped his sleeve, yeah, that's the bit that was hanging down. Yeah.
So you got out of that position back to 12?
Yeah, I got back to 12 platoon, and then I dived into a trench there, and there was a chappy there, Geordie Chambers, actually. And he was knocking an hole through the side because the enemy was coming around the other side. They had a bit of cover there so that he could see him. Of course, he was rather surprised to see me come tearing in the trench. Then I went to try and get back to my trench, which had been hit by a shell or mortar bomb. And that was smouldering away there, so any kit that I had there was gone. And then I dived into it with a sergeant and someone else into a big deep trench, and the shelling was taking place pretty badly then. The sides of the trench were just moving. It's terrifying, really. Then we were moved back a wee bit from there, I was dished out with a rifle then, from one of the chappies who had been shot, killed, or whatever. And then we were firing back at the enemy from a bit further distance, and the lieutenant there, a very brave man. He was tall, slim man. We were throwing him the grenades, and he was throwing the grenades at the Chinese. The funny part there were two Chinese, they must have been doped, I should think, sat on one of our positions, one of our old trenches, eating our combat rations. So that was a rather silly thing for them to do, but that's what they did.
Were they killed?
I don't know. I saw them there, and then the next thing, we had orders to go down this small track, down onto the main road, onto the main track, and get back to battalion HQ position. And going down there, I could remember this machine gun from A Company. I just glanced around, and I could see A Company Hill beginning to show around the corner. And I remembered this machine gun, and I shouted to the blokes to move over, and they did immediately. And then this machine gun opened up and tore a track all up the dusty road. Yeah.
Without hitting anybody?
Didn't hit anybody. That was a good thing. That's what that's. So through seeing that A Company Hill coming back round, showing round the corner, was the first incident that came to my mind, was that machine gun. And then, of course, we got back to where Battalion HQ was, and then we moved up a little track on the right-hand side over a little stream, waited there for a while, and I think they dished us out with an egg each. And then went up onto the three, up onto the Big Hill, where we took up positions there.
What happened then?
Well, all hell was being let loose, and the Chinese were moving down in the valley along the track towards what was Battalion HQ, and every now and again then the artillery would open up. I suppose RCO or someone there was passing on the message that they could hear the enemy in big numbers coming along the tracks, and they let fly with the artillery. And then in the daytime, of course, we had some air support then, one or two. Rockets coming in from the air support and firing all around for a day or so. And then the bugler, one of our bugler got up and played all the British calls except two, last post and so on. He wouldn't play that, no. And everything stopped. The battle actually stopped when they started to play the bugle calls, because the Chinese worked on bugle calls, and I'm sure they were confused. And then everything stopped for a while until he played all the calls through the British Army calls. And then when he stopped, it all started up again. And that same chappie, I think he died a few months ago.
Did you know him?
Not really well, no, because I wasn't with the Gloucesters previous to the Korean War. But he stood up and he got up and stood up on the trench and played all the calls.
You saw him, did you?
Pardon?
Did you see
yeah,
him?
Yeah, yes, yes. Yeah. And then another thing I can remember was some boys from a B company, I think it was. There was only one or two came through, up through our lines. And there was one there, an Irish fella, who I hadn't seen for a long time, who I had known in one of the other regiments previous. And I shouted to him, and he came and got into the trench with me, and he's, oh, terrible state, his face all cut. He'd been fighting with his Chinese. And then he said, well, I can't stay too long, but he was pleased to see me. And he went on then, and what happened to him after that, I don't know. Whether he was taken prisoner or killed or what, I don't know.
Had he been in hand-to-hand fighting with
Yes, that's what. Yes, that's what he had been in, yes.
Yeah. Had you been in a hand-to-hand?
No, I didn't get into, not to that, no. No, but B Company, some of B Company did, I know. No, the Chinese were moving around there, even when we were on the Big Hill, they were moving around, and one or two of them were getting picked off, you know. I think that's when our colonel went out with a rifle, and he came back and said, told the chap, he said, he'd been catching a few flies.
Meaning the Chinese?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then?
What part did I get to? Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course, then we stayed in that trench for a while, and then I think that the end of that day we were moved up onto another part of the hill. We were trying to dig a trench there, but we had nothing to dig them with except our bare hands, you know, so We used rock and stones, anything we could get hold of. And again, I can remember the lieutenant, our lieutenant, coming round there. It was getting dark, and we were being shelled then. And he was walking about, and I can remember saying to him, "Oh, come in here, take some cover for a while. We want you after this." So he came there for a short while, and then when the shelling steadied up a bit, he was gone again. So, and he got through. He got through. Yeah, quite a brave man. Then I suppose it was time for us to try and get out from that position, which we were passed an order from the CO to every man for himself. And that's when a sergeant from the machine gun group, which support company, was giving us cover and fire when we went down the hill. And of course there were Chinese around there then, and I think they were rather surprised to see us coming down. And of course then we had to make the best way we could, and we were all going along quite as fast as possible, machine gun fire on both sides along this valley. Yeah.
Were you having to fight your way out?
No, we had nothing to fight with by then. I had a rifle, and I fired the last shot. I saw some branches move, some twigs move, and they were quite close, and that was a Chinese in there who was firing at some of our chaps. So I fired quickly at him and went on by, and there was no more fire came out of there. So. And then, of course, they had machine guns on each side of the valley, each side of where we were going along. And Chinese infantry chasing us up the back. And then to top it all, American tanks were coming in on the other side, and they started firing. Then there was an aircraft came over, a spotter plane, which was one of our own spotter planes, or American spotter plane. Diving down, and one of the officers, I don't know whether it's his shirt or what, he was waving this in the air to this aircraft, and the aircraft realized what was going on, and he went over to the tanks, and I don't think he could get in touch with them by radio, and he was throwing out bits of paper to try and signal to them. And of course that stopped. And then we went on from there, and there was a latrine what the Chinese no doubt had used, and we were plastered. We went through that without realizing what it was until afterwards. And I remember getting to the end of this valley, and I came out of this dip to see another Scotch chap with a revolver facing towards me. I think he thought it was a Chinese coming after him. And I got from there, across this piece of open ground, we're getting fired at again. And there was an American officer came in a Jeep. So we got into this Jeep. He moved us on a little way, went on towards some little building. And I could feel wet in the back of the Jeep. And I thought, oh, God, no. I said, are you all right, Jock? And he said, yes. Yeah. And it was water from the tanks. The machine gun had hit the tanks at the back. and the water was squirting into the Jeep. And the other officer went into this hut and looking for some of his men. They weren't there. And then we went on from there, and then we disembarked from there, and we were getting drove up a steep slope by machine gun fire. Or whether this was meant to be or not, I don't know. And when we got to the top, there was more of a, like a sheer drop. It was like little fir trees growing in the side. So we went down there, and then got to the bottom again, and another machine gun. I had them all over the place there. And there was big heaps of rock and stones, what the civilians had put there at some time. So we got behind those, and then some tanks were coming in. And that's, I think I must have flaked out then. And I couldn't remember much more for, at that time. And these tanks picked up our chaps and turned to go out. And I must have fell off a tank. And then I went up another slope there with another chappie from the Gloucester Regiment. I don't know who he was. I can't never remember. And we went to go up this slope, and there was some artillery, a dark man, two of them there, giving instructions to their over the radio, and they were also eating a tin of fruit. We grabbed the tin of fruit. I was so hungry and thirsty. I hadn't had any drink all this time, you see, and drinking this. And then, again, I don't know what happened. I must have flaked out again. Then we went, come to again, I suppose, and went on a bit further. And then must have went out again, and I was picked up by an American ambulance crew and stuck into this ambulance. And I can remember coming to, and another chappie with me, another Gloucester boy. And I said, oh, I wanted to get to the Gloucester Regiment, Gloucesters. Oh, they didn't know. The American, no, they didn't know. You know, this is, you've got to go. You've got to go back. So they took us back to, I think it was Suwon. And then on an aircraft there to Pusan, to an hospital in Pusan. And we were in hell of a state. It was rather dirty. So then we were a quick treatment in this American hospital, and they gave us food and so on here. I said about the clothes, oh, I better take that off. So they gave me an American uniform. Well, then the next thing, they're ringing to the transit camp to send someone over to pick us up. Went over, and of course the sergeant major there, he was rather annoyed to think that I was wearing an American uniform. So straight away we were transferred into a British uniform again and dished out with a rifle and ammunition and so on. And I went on to the train then to go back up to the line. And the other chap, he was...